Enoch's grand vision, the earth shall rest, Moses 7, 60-69, Book of Moses, Insight number 29. Having witnessed the abrupt end of the long-awaited coming of the Son of Man in his unexpected crucifixion, resurrection, and ascension, and having now understood that his presence on earth would not halt the wickedness of the world, Enoch again wept and cried unto the Lord, saying, Wilt thou not come again upon the earth? In this insight, we will see Enoch's anguished hope fulfilled at last, when the righteous would be gathered to a holy city, and God would make Zion his abode. As we will see, this prophetic expectation appears elsewhere in the ancient Enoch literature and Jewish tradition. A provisional proposal for the structuring of Moses 7, 60-69 into seven sections is given in the appendix. 1. The Lord will fulfill his oath. In answer to Enoch's question about whether God will come again upon the earth, the Lord declares that he will, quote, fulfill the oath he made to Enoch concerning the children of Noah, namely that he would call upon them. In this light, explained the Draper, Brown, and Rhodes, it becomes evident that the second coming will be the crowning moment among the Lord's contacts with the children of Noah. The Lord's oath is made doubly sure by the use of his own name. As I live, even so will I come in the last days, in the days of wickedness and vengeance. Having sworn that he would return, the Lord at last addresses Enoch's repeated unanswered question with a solemn declaration that indeed the day would come when the earth shall rest. 2. Great tribulations among the children of men and preservation of the Lord's people. Jarringly, the Lord immediately followed his welcome promise with a terrible warning of great tribulations that would take place before that day. The first and perhaps greatest tribulation is that a veil of darkness would cover the earth. This seems to indicate that communication between heaven and the children of men would be severed due to wickedness. As to the righteous, Elder Neil A. Maxwell comments, quote, God preserved and prepared Enoch's people in the midst of awful and enveloping evil. And reassuringly, he has promised his people in our own time that through great tribulation shall be among the children of men, my people will I preserve. The Lord will gather the righteous. The phrase, and righteousness will I send down out of heaven, and truth will I send forth out of the earth, recalls a similar phrase in Psalm 85:11. However, the sequence of the terms truth, emet, and righteousness, tzedakah, is inverted, and more importantly, different actions are indicated. In the psalm, the personification of the divine traits is used to create a metaphor of peace and prosperity in the land, whereas in Moses 7:62, it depicts the coming forth of the united testimony from above and below of the only begotten, specifically of his resurrection and the resurrection of all men. Latter-day Saint interpreters understand the imagery of Moses 7:62 is referring to the restoration of the gospel. Heavenly messengers, perhaps meaning to include the Savior, the righteous himself, are to be sent down out of heaven, and truth, referring to the Book of Mormon, or perhaps other hidden books, is to be sent forth out of the earth. The personification of righteousness in the Book of Moses is apt in light of the use of divine virtues in the names of heavenly messengers in 1 Enoch 40:8-9. Likewise, as George Minton observes, the Book of Mormon as a testimony of the risen Lord is equally fitting, since, quote, the symbol of its coming forth from the earth is reminiscent of the Lord's resurrection, end of quote. How well does the Book of Moses mention of resurrection of the only begotten and of all men fit into the ancient Enoch literature? In a previous insight, we have already discussed the use of the term only begotten in the Hebrew Bible and Jewish tradition. Going further with respect to views at Qumran on the role of the Messiah, and perhaps in addition Elijah and Ezekiel, as agents of the resurrection, we cite the Messianic Apocalypse, which closely parallels the Gospels, use of Isaiah 26 and 61, to describe the mission of Jesus. Among other things, the Messianic Apocalypse declares that, quote, his Messiah will heal the badly wounded and will make the dead live. Benjamin Wold couples this passage with 4Q Pseudo-Ezekiel to argue that a personal bodily resurrection in the last days is envisioned by the authors, not merely a temporary revivification or a symbolic restoration of Israel. Of course, in contrast to some other ancient religions, evidence for an early Israelite belief in a personal resurrection is controversial. Significantly, however, some of the earliest and most explicit of the extant descriptions of the resurrection in Jewish literature that do exist are found in the Enoch literature, in particular the Book of Parables, which is so rich in its description of the Son of Man. Quote, "And the righteous and the chosen will be saved on that day, and the faces of the sinners and the unrighteous will they thenceforth not see. And the Lord of the spirits will dwell with them, and with that the Son of Man they will eat, and lie down, and rise up forever and ever. And the righteous and chosen will have arisen from the earth, and have ceased to cast down their faces, and have put on the garment of glory. And this will be your garment, the garment of life from the Lord of spirits, and your garments will not wear out, and your glory will not fade in the presence of the Lord of spirits." End of quote. The description of the flood of righteousness and truth that will effect the gathering of the elect in the last days is in deliberate counterpoint to the account of the flood of water that brought about the destruction of the wicked in Noah's day. Noah's flood brought about destruction, whereas this flood will bring salvation. The prophet Joseph Smith explained, quote, "Men and angels are to be co-workers in bringing to pass this great work, and Zion is to be prepared, even a new Jerusalem, for the elect that are going to be gathered from the four quarters of the earth, and to be established in holy city, for the tabernacle of the Lord shall be with them." End of quote. The Lord told Enoch that his people would be gathered unto a place which I shall prepare. Jewish tradition echoes these words. For example, in 4 Ezra 1, 13, 35, we read, quote, "Zion will come and be made manifest to all people, prepared and built, as you saw the mountain carved out without hands," quote, end of quote. Similarly, 2 Baruch 4, 2 and 3 reads, quote, "It is that city which shall be revealed with me that was already prepared from the moment that I decided to create paradise," end of quote. The nature of the gathering place of God's elect as a holy city is described in 1 Enoch's Book of the Parables 45, 5, quote, "And my chosen one shall I make to dwell on it, but those who commit sin and error will not set foot in it," end of quote. Jewish tradition also describes a new Jerusalem. According to the Testament of Levi 10:5, "For the house which the Lord shall choose shall be called Jerusalem, as the Book of Enoch, the righteous, maintains," end of quote. This account may be citing 1 Enoch 90, 28 and 29, which tells of how the old house, in other words, the old city of Jerusalem, is removed and replaced with a new house, namely the new Jerusalem. Moreover, in one version of 2 Enoch, the seer calls the place of his ascent the highest Jerusalem. 4. The Lord and Enoch City will receive the righteous. N.T. Wright, the well-known Anglican bishop and New Testament scholar, described the uniting of heaven and earth as follows, quote, "God made heaven and earth. At last he will remake both and join them together forever. And when we come to the picture of the actual end in Revelation 21 and 22, we find not ransomed souls making their way to a disembodied heaven, but rather the new Jerusalem coming down from heaven to earth, uniting the two in a lasting embrace," end of quote. Again, the ancient Enoch literature echoes the themes of the Book of Moses. In the Book of Parables 45, 4 and 5, we read, "On that day I shall make my chosen one dwell among them, and I shall transform heaven and make it a blessing and a light forever. And I shall transform the earth and make it a blessing, and my chosen ones I shall make to dwell upon it," end of quote. For a second time in this passage, Moses 7:63 shares similar imagery with Psalm 85, and this time 1 Enoch does the same. However, as in the previous instance, there is an important difference. In Psalm 85 and 1 Enoch, two divine attributes meet and kiss, whereas in Moses 7:63, it is Enoch's city and the Lord himself that fall upon the necks of the righteous and kiss them, as they would a returning prodigal. Robert Alter, writing of Psalm 85, captures the commonality of spirit with Moses 7:63, quote, "This bold metaphor focuses the sense of an era of perfect loving harmony. Rashi imagines a landscape in which all Israelites will kiss one another," end of quote. 5 and 6, "The earth shall rest, and Enoch receives a fullness of joy." Differing with the Lord's previous instruction to Enoch, he delivers his word as a monologue. There is no reply from Enoch this time, only an epilogue from the narrator. After having seen and heard all things, Enoch's questions were answered, and he received a fullness of joy. In the next insight, we'll discuss ancient traditions that resonate with the Book of Moses' account of how Enoch's city was taken up into God's own bosom.